Hey, welcome to the Lossless Podcast, where we report on every frequency of the current music business from the perspective of a curious student. My name is Susie, and welcome to our first episode, Pay Me Baby One More Time, Britney Spears' recent catalog sale as an omen for the future of our industry. Thanks for tuning in. It's Britney. I'll let you finish that sentence. About a month ago, I opened the news, and I saw a name in the headlines that I hadn't seen there in quite a while, and that was Britney Spears. And yes, while her name has come up here and there over the past few years, it hasn't always necessarily been music-related. Some of the headlines from the New York Times and TMZ read Spears sells her whole catalog, and I'll admit I was shocked to see her making such a big move after so many years of silence. After all, she hasn't released an album in the past decade since she put out Glory in 2016. Nevertheless, her catalog sale was announced earlier this year, in February, and since then it's been stirring up some debate. But before we can dive into this debate, we first have to talk about what catalog sales actually are and why they're so critical in the current music industry. I like how entertainment correspondent Chloe Malos defined it in an interview for NBC. When she said that catalog sales are simply when you sell part or all of your publishing rights or master recordings to a third party. There are many intricacies and nuances that go into catalog sales, but to look at it just from a macro perspective, catalog sales are truly of growing importance in our modern industry. After all, they're often worth hundreds of millions of dollars, especially for some of these star artists, which means that a lot of money is moving in the marketplace when the sales do occur. And they're occurring quite frequently. As Billboard reported in 2022, catalog sales were up 180% from 2020 and has only grown since then. And I understand why. Music is a solid asset to invest in. It offers significant and steady promise of revenue, there are lots of ways to exploit the music to generate more income, and it boosts the net worth of the company that owns the rights. So I see why so many companies want in and want to build up their music catalogs. They see music as a viable financial asset. So with this in mind, and zooming in on Britney Spears' catalog sale, we unfortunately don't know the specifics because it's all locked away behind a series of NDAs. However, we do know that she sold her ownership share to Primary Wave, a leading independent music publisher. And while Sony still holds on to her master recordings, Spears likely handed over her portion of artist royalties and whatever publishing rights she controlled. And this includes the rights to some of her top hits like Toxic and Oops, I Did It Again. Now, with respect to the number next to the dollar sign, we unfortunately don't know this value either. However, this sale was labeled as a landmark deal, which means that while we don't know the exact dollar amount of the catalog, we can only assume that it's similar to other landmark sales, and that it was likely worth hundreds and millions of dollars. For instance, back in 2023, Justin Bieber sold his catalog for over $200 million to Hypnosis Songs Capital. And back in December 2021, Bruce Springsteen sold his entire catalog of recorded music and publishing rights to Sony Music Group for an estimated $500 to $550 million. Now, seeing these large numbers is where I personally take a pause. Because while Britney has made no new music, she's still pocketing millions in cash for the sale of her works. And it's not like this sale is a precursor to her next big move or release. In fact, she's been very clear on her social media that she has no intent to make new music or return to the industry anytime soon. It's been 8 years since her last live performance, and since then, the stage has been dark. But now, she still gets to take this big chunk of change and is laughing all the way to the bank. So my question is, why now is she selling her catalog? Is loneliness just killing her? Or is she actually not so innocent and making a potentially toxic decision? To better understand Spears' strategic play, let's look a bit into her career to see what led her here. Much of what we know about Britney Spears' career can be found in her memoir from 2023, entitled The Woman in Me. She outlines her life starting from her childhood in Louisiana, in which she always loved to sing and dance. She soon entered the Disney universe with her role in the All-New Mickey Mouse Club, and by the time she was 15, she was signed to Jive Records, although by this point, the tabloids had already started not being so nice to her. Nevertheless, she put out titles like Hit Me Baby One More Time, which led her to top the US Billboard Hot 100 chart 5 times throughout her career. She also achieved 6 number one debuts on the Billboard 200 Albums chart. In total, she put out 9 studio albums and received 8 Grammy nominations, though only one win. The takeaway from these metrics? Britney Spears truly was one of the key voices of pop music in the 2000s. They're all a testament to the fact that she became a household name. And even though Britney Spears was before my time, I still feel truly nostalgic for her music, and my personal connection to her runs deep. She's been a staple on all of my party playlists, and I just about remember most of the lyrics to her top songs, and I still think I can do the dance from Toxic when it was featured on the Just Dance game for the Wii. It's no secret that she was able to win over the masses with her catchy lyrics, upbeat melodies, and fun, albeit sometimes controversial, fashion choices. And it's this relevance that we see trickling into our music trends today. Nostalgia is a really key player in our music industry right now, and we're seeing a homage to people like Britney Spears through the resurgence of genres like pop and other subgenres like hyperpop and bubblegum pop. This is especially prevalent with certain artists like Charlie XCX, Zara Larsson, and Tate McRae, who emulate Britney Spears' electronic dance beats and flashy performances. But even after a successful run and media fame, Britney's career took a turn when her tumultuous personal life started to eclipse her music. After concerns arose regarding her mental health, controversy soon led to conservatorship. In layman's terms, a conservatorship is when a court of law can assign one person, the conservator, to look after and essentially make decisions for another person who is deemed unable to care for themselves, the conservatee. And after the unraveling of her personal life and concerning decline in mental health, Britney Spears found herself as conservatee under her father, Jamie Spears, for 14 years. In this time, even though Britney continued to work under the conservatorship, her father had control over her finances and virtually her whole career. In response to other questionable conditions and speculated abuse that transpired under the conservatorship, fans created the hashtag Free Britney movement, and several documentaries were released by FX and Netflix, which helped her story get told, ultimately leading her to finally dissolving the conservatorship in 2021. Now, Britney's finally free, and that brings us to today. So now, liberated from her conservatorship, Britney has sworn off of creating and performing for the foreseeable future, and her music sits in the hands of Primary Wave. And honestly, I'm excited to see what they'll do with these newly acquired rights. Primary Wave is at the cutting edge of the industry and responsible for a lot of cool projects that have come out recently, like the Whitney Houston biopic I Want to Dance with Somebody. And ultimately, I view this as a win for Britney. She has a powerhouse publisher behind her to help her find new ways to earn money without her having to step into the studio, and she gets to pocket a nice paycheck. And Britney isn't the only artist who's hip to these benefits. Many catalog sales are going on and are planned to occur within the coming years, which points towards some larger realities about the future of our industry. In all honesty, when I first learned about what music catalog sales are and truly grasped the surrounding conversation, I just thought they were great. I saw investment money coming into the music marketplace, and I saw this old music being revitalized and implemented into new projects, pushing it out to younger generations. But then, one day, I had to listen to an interview for one of my classes, and it was between Rick Beato, one of my favorite instrumentalists and music industry commentators, and the renowned Ted Gioia, who is a music critic and historian. In their conversation, which was posted on YouTube in May of 2024, Gioia had some really interesting takes that truly caught me off guard. To summarize Gioia's argument, he said that record labels are blurring the line between being solely music companies and IP management companies. No longer are they focusing on creating the next big star, but simply they're just trying to build up their catalogs. And the issue arises here when the people who are managing the music aren't music lovers like those who are at Primary Wave. Instead, it's when the people who are managing the music are outsiders to the industry, in his words, just bankers and accountants. as he described, these huge players in the industry, like Universal, Sony, and Concord, are all acquiring publishing rights to be able to re-record the songs and exploit them in other ways. And this is what he describes as leading to a phenomenon called cultural stagnation. That all this money is going to investing in the past, in these catalogs, and no one is investing in the future of music. Which is almost a signal that these large companies are losing faith in the future of our industry. And this, for me, is where I see the battle arising. A battle between asset and art. Because it makes me question, at what point can we view music as a financial thing? You know, see the worth in selling rights to be able to keep recording and pushing old music, while we're also still fostering a healthy future industry for our artists to come. And I'll admit, when I really started digging into this question of art versus asset, is when I started to feel a little vexed about Britney's catalog sale. Because on one hand, while I feel this is a great opportunity for her to keep profiting off of her previous work, especially now that she's been freed from the conservatorship, I'm also finding myself siding a little bit with Joya. In that now, all this money and these resources are going into the acquisition and cultivation of her album, but this could possibly be closing off the door for the next Britney Spears, who has now been robbed of both the resources and spotlight because these old tracks are now being shoved back onto the shelf. At the end of the day, I believe that there is truth on both sides of the discussion. But what I ultimately feel is that investors should simply be informed. Music can be both an asset and an art form, but it needs to be respected in both realms, and it needs to be respected equally. An understanding of the cultural importance of the music, of the artistic integrity of the lyrics, and the worth that the actual orchestration holds goes just as far as recognizing the financial power of catalog acquisitions, especially in the future of the music industry as it continues to grow in the coming decades. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about catalog sales in light of the questions over the music industry's future, specifically regarding AI. Now more than ever, it is important to help our up-and-coming writers and artists plant their feet, because AI is leading to an oversaturated market and a shallower appreciation of human-made music. After all, we know what's safe, and these catalogs of successful music are safe. But after a while, as Joya argues, we can't keep living off this old music. We need good music, new music, and human-made music, and that will only be possible if we reserve enough resources and attention outside of catalog acquisition to help make this music happen. On one hand, I am keenly aware of my responsibility as both a music lover and a student of the music industry to keep a critical eye on these music catalog sales. To ensure that music isn't being reduced down to simply a financial asset, and to look into whether attention is being given equitably to both old and new music. On the other hand, I am still very excited by the prospect of these catalog sales and to see what new and innovative projects come out of not only Britney Spears' catalog, but also out of the landmark deals to come in these next few years. So I say gimme more, and I can't wait to see how catalog acquisition will shape both the financial and artistic future of our industry. This has been the first episode of the Lossless Podcast. See you in the next one. Mm-hmm.